Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, good evening, and welcome to the Lob podcast from These Football Times. And tonight, we have another episode from the One Love series, where we are asking members of the Football Times team to talk about the special love in their life, the football club that they support, and why, despite all the heartaches inevitably encountered, it remains their one true footballing love. If you have already listened to some previous episodes, you might be wondering why you're listening to my voice, that's of Paul McParnon, and not that of our regular presenter, the mellifluous tones of Gary Thacker. Well, tonight, Gary's given us the opportunity to turn the tables, and tonight we're going to give Gary the chance to talk about his one true footballing love. So looking forward to a really interesting episode this evening, and we'll start off in the normal fashion. Gary, who is this football club? Why this football club? And how long have you supported them?
I mean, you've already thrown me a curveball, calling me mellifluous. I'm not quite sure what that works. I'll have to look that up afterwards, but I'm assuming it's fairly complex.
It's fairly complex, guy. Very complex.
That's good. Okay, well, my football club is, you know, anybody who sort of regularly listens to These Football Times podcasts will know is Chelsea. It's a weird thing, you know, and all the people I've interviewed on these series, that's six or seven people so far, have all the great reasons why they support the club that they support. I haven't got that. Simply because I just can't remember why. I mean, I've supported Chelsea since the early 1960s. When I say the early 1960s, I mean 1960, you know, where I'd be four. I remember Jimmy Greaves leaving Chelsea, going to AC Milan and saying to my dad, I don't understand. Why does anybody leave Chelsea? So I was a supporter then when Jimmy Greaves left Chelsea. So that's how long it's been. So we're talking 60, that's about 65 years now. But I don't know why. I mean, I come from the industrial West Midlands. My football education was my dad took me to watch Warsaw play, a million miles from Chelsea. And I can't even say it was the kit because in those days it was black and white.
Of course.
I honestly can't remember, Paul, but 60 odd years. It's just too far to remember why.
but what's it strange for you, Gary? I mean, growing up in the West Midlands in the Walsall area, what was it like going to your local primary school? Well, I guess most locals would have supported Wolverhampton Wanderers, possibly one or two of the Birmingham teams. Did you feel a bit out of things? Could you share your passion for Chelsea with anybody else in the school?
As far as I can remember, nobody else was a Chelsea fan. You know, in those days, Chelsea weren't a particularly great team. The local clubs, the Wolves especially, were sort of quite dominant in the late 50s, early 60s, were sort of, you know, the dominant team, not in the Midlands, but in the country. So, yeah, there again, I can't say I remember being sort of made to sit in the corner for supporting a team, from West London rather than a local team. But looking back, it must have been difficult. But yeah, it can't come back so many years now. It's difficult to remember. Certainly, sort of growing up through junior school and senior school, it was certainly more prevalent then. Lots of Villa fans and Wolves fans, Birmingham fans, even Baggies fans, I suppose. You know, but yeah, I guess I was a little bit of an outsider then. But I always say, you know, lots of people who I sort of went to school with or met afterwards say, "Oh, why don't you support your local team?" And you find out actually that they don't support their local team. They don't actually, but they support their nearest big club. So, I mean, it's a little bit of, and I always take the view, I don't care who anybody else supports, and I'm not going to question why they do that. And if somebody says to me, "Why do you support Chelsea?" That's none of your damn business, because I don't know why. I've got a good answer, is the honest answer. But yeah, it's
and
weird.
To be fair, you don't need an answer, do you?
No.
I don't think particularly.
No.
So would your first Chelsea game that you saw, would that have been in the West Midlands?
I remember I didn't see Chelsea play a lot. I remember Dad took me to Chelsea, played the Baggies. I don't know what year it was. Ian Hutchinson and Peter Osgood played. I remember that. I think Chelsea lost 2-1. We were standing in the popular end of the Hawthorns, and my dad said to me, "Don't chunk shoot Chelsea score because you might die." I mean, I don't know how old I was, but that must have been late 60s, I would guess. So I'd probably be around the 10, 11 mark, I guess. And that was probably the first live game I saw Chelsea play. Yeah, and it was sort of a bit surreal to see players that you'd read about in the paper. You didn't see TV, so much of football, wasn't it? Pretty much, and you saw them in real life, and it was a real chance. The only sad thing about it was because Baggies played in blue and white stripes. Chelsea played in yellow, not blue. Baggies should have changed. I want to say my team playing blue.
Absolutely. So you mentioned some famous names in the past there, Peter Osgood, Ian Hutchinson. Who is, in your opinion, was the best player ever to play for Chelsea?
Well, I mean, you know, it's because of the longevity of my support of Chelsea, there have been some great names. I mean, going back in history, Bobby Tamblyn. He was a great player. I remember Bobby Tamblyn and Jimmy Greaves.
And such an underrated striker.
Massively.
In that kind of, the pantheon of 60s strikers, Bobby Tamblyn, in my opinion, never quite gets the recognition of his prodigious goal-scoring talents deserve.
Too right. And it might be because Chelsea never won anything really particularly important, you know, in his era when he was at his best. I mean, aside from Bobby, there was sort of, you know, Peter Minetti was always a great hero of mine. Charlie Cook. More recently, obviously, we had the likes of Zola, you know, Cech, Drogba, Terry, and obviously, you know, Cole Palmer. But I guess, you know, if somebody said to me, you know, who do you think was the best Chelsea player? I'd have to go with Frank Lampard. The guy, I mean, I think his third or fourth top Premier League goal scorer. Ain't even a striker. So, yeah, I think I'd say who's the best Chelsea player that you've seen play. Well, best for the club, not much skillful, perhaps Zola would probably take that, or perhaps Eden Hazard or Palmer Flag, but best player, most valuable player to the club, I would say, would Frank Lampard.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good choice, that guy. And, of course, he's the one who superseded Bobby Tamblyn's goal-scoring record for Chelsea.
Absolutely right.
So, did you have a playing hero yourself who might have been different from Frank Lampard?
Always. My hero was always Peter Osgood.
And for those who don't know Peter Osgood, could give us some flavour of why he was such a flamboyant character and why he was such a footballing entertainer.
Osgood was very much a member of the Carnaby Street set of Chelsea players at the time. Alan Hudson as well was that sort of, you know, maverick player. He was top goal scorer. I think he was only 19 at the time when he went to the World Cup in 1970. Never got on the pitch because Ramsey didn't like players with flair or imagination. I mean, he was very much for players of a similar era, very much of the ilk of Frank Worthington, Stan Bowles, that sort of player who played sort of off the cuff, didn't really like being regimented into a set style of play, but a fantastic player and always my hero. And even today, I've got a replica 1970 FA Cup final shirt with number 9 on the back. There's no names on the back in those days, obviously, but the picture I was going to. I've also got a picture which I use sometimes as my avatar on social media. It's me standing next to Peter Osgood's statue outside Stamford Bridge entitled The King and I.
And wasn't Peter Osgood almost as famous for his off-the-field activities as well as on-the-field activities?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, as I say about, you know, the Carnaby Street, this is the days of this sort of the hippie London set, and Chelsea were very much, they were very much painted as the Southern Softies. But, you know, they had a great rival with the Leeds United team of the similar era with Revy. And, you know, they were anything but, and they could mix it. And, you know, I know we've done a pod with your good self, Paul, about the 1970 FA Cup final. And I wrote a piece about it.
What a game that was.
I wrote a piece about it called Cry Havoc and Let Slip the Dogs of War. Well, because that was the sort of thing. But yeah, off the pitch, the Chelsea team of that era had a reputation for sort of, you know, enjoying life, shall we say. Perhaps, you know, sort of the discipline of footballers these days didn't apply in those days, and by God, they enjoyed themselves. But, you know, as I say, that was just part of the makeup of that team, and particularly Ozzy. Just a one-off player that sort of had immense skill. He had pace, he was tall, he had skill, he scored lots of goals. It was just a great hero to me. And I suppose, you know, the lifestyle sort of only enhanced it, really.
Absolutely, yeah, because you're thinking that Joe's best often gets, you know, loads of comments about the fact he saw Miss World. But, I mean, Peter Osgood allegedly had a liaison with Rachel Walsh, and for those of a certain age like ourselves, that's a pretty good relationship to be involved in.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, and I mean, it's true that that's the reputation, and even if it's not true, I can't blame the bloke for spreading the rumour either. I mean, I'd spread the rumour if people believed it, then, right?
I'm sure they would, Gary, and if you want to reveal all this evening, we're all ears. No, but yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, Peter Osgood, he was a kind of era of off-the-cuff footballers who was just blessed with immense talent. But people also forget as well the punishments he took in matches at a time when skillful forwards just were not protected by the match officials.
You're so right, Paul. You're so right. These are the days before the tackle from behind was outlawed, which changed football quite so much. And, you know, they used to get clattered all the time. I mean, not only Osgood, you mentioned George Best, and there's, you know, famously George Best, a picture of the bruises up his legs and the back of his legs and everywhere. But, you know, Ozzy was pretty much the same. But in those days, it was like a badge of honour. You didn't squeam. You didn't roll about on the floor. There's no Neymar, like, triple somersaults with a tuck. You know, these guys just got up and got on with it. They were hard as nails. And, yeah, certainly Ozzy took his fair share of licks and, you know, But there we go, going back to the 1970 FA Cup final replay, particularly at Old Trafford. I mean, that was a battle and a half. And I don't think, I think I remember about this conversation with you, Paul. I don't think there was any bookings nobody sent off.
But by modern standards, it was quite incredible. But by the standards of the 60s and 70s, it wasn't that dirty again.
No, it was just the way it was football in those days. And, you know, forwards, there was, you know, any skillful forward who was sort of going to dance past somebody, you're going to get upended. And you're not going to get upended tripped. You're going to get whacked. You know, these are the days, the odd men, you know, Chopper Harris was at Chelsea, you know, you had Tommy Smith, Norman Bott, Alex Hunter. These guys were as fated for being hard, shall we say, as a metaphor for being cruelly barbaric, as though it's just fated as much as a skillful forward, because that was part of the game, as you say, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely was, Gary. So we just on their piece, I was called fantastic player. Who in your memory has been your most disappointing or frustrating Chelsea player?
Yeah, this is a difficult one. And, you know, when I was sort of thinking, after we had the conversation a week or so ago, Paul, about, you know, saying, do you want to me to interview you, this is the one I struggled with. I'm going to chuck a few names, and I'll tell you, I'll come to the one we're going to decide on last. Timo Werner, who came to Chelsea from Leipzig. I mean, I saw it today, I looked it up today. The first goal he scored for Chelsea was absolutely stunning. There was a through ball from defence, and he's out on the left, and he steps over the ball, runs round the defender, cuts across, and you're thinking, this guy is going to be amazing. And then he decided he could miss goals from anywhere. I mean, he worked his socks off, and he's one of these players. He's a bit like when we signed Shevchenko.
Shevchenko, yeah.
Who was past his best, but he gave everything for the cause. And so it was sort of a little bit frustrating because, you know, he seemed to have everything, but it never really came off. The other one that came to mind, unfortunately, who my real decision is, Chris Sutton. We signed Chris Sutton from Blackburn on a ridiculous fee. And I think he scored 3 goals in his time at Chelsea. And they're the kind of player who'd been with Shearer at Blackburn, part of, you know, the SAS, and looks every inch, you know, is going to be an England striker for the next 5 or 6 years. And he put a blue shirt on, he turned into my granny. You know, I mean, I just missed so many chances. And the other guy I was going to mention, which this is when Ranieri was managing Chelsea. We signed a player called Slavisa Jokanović, who later went on to manage Watford and I think Fulham as well. I might be right.
He did, yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
And he played, he was a midfield player. And I saw him play a few times and I'm thinking, I don't know what this guy is. And then he found out later that he had the same agent as Ranieri. And you think, that's where he signed. But I think looking back, I mean, over the years, I think probably the most frustrating and disappointing player is Romelu Lukaku, because he should have been. I mean, he played for your guys as well,
he
Paul.
He did, yeah.
And he should have been everything, an English football striker. He had all the equipment, I mean, strength, pace, power, height, scored goals. And, you know, we had him the first time and he fell out with Mourinho because he missed a penalty in a Super Cup playoff. I can't remember who he played against. But he missed a penalty and apparently Mourinho gave him a rollicking and he cried, reportedly. I mean, obviously, I wasn't there. Allegedly. And Mourinho sort of said, this guy in for me, you know, hard enough. And sort of he was out from there. And then we brought him back. And I think on his debut, we played Arsenal. I think he scored twice in his debut. And then this guy is perfect. And then it all went pear-shaped because he said, you know, when he went to an international game, that he missed Italy. And, you know, why did you come back to Chelsea then? yes, but the guy who had everything should have been. And I read a piece today about him, actually. He said when he came to Chelsea, he was being anointed as the new Drogba. But that was never his game. Well, you know, well, show us, where is your game then? But so frustrating, that guy, yeah. That would be my most frustrating, disappointed player for Chelsea.
Yeah, it's a good choice, that, Gary, because obviously from my perspective, the Robin Carr, who was a huge success at Everton, and maybe there's an argument that we actually got him at the right time. We got Pete Lukaku in terms of his career, because I never quite thought he was the same player at Manchester United after he left Everton. And certainly the player who Chelsea signed for the second time bore little resemblance to the guy who'd been banging the goals in week in, week out to Goodison Park.
Too right, Paul, too right. And that's, you know, I think, you know, this, when you look at frustrating, disappointing players, it's players that you think you're given a massive hope about, and then it never gets fulfilled. I say Timo Werner was the same, Chris Sutton was the same.
I mean, going back even further, ever throw in the name of Tony Haley, who had one season at Chelsea in the 60s, did you have any memories of him? Because he was a massive big money signing at the time. You know, I think it was close to being a record fee. And it raised a few eyebrows because people couldn't quite see how he'd fit into the Chelsea team. And he never quite gelled there, did he?
No, I think there again, it's one of these players that perhaps wasn't signed by the manager, but was signed by the directors or the board, shall we say, or somebody higher up who thought this guy will work well because he scores goals a lot. But he certainly didn't fit the team at the time, no. And, you know, I mean, Chelsea have got a record for doing that sort of crazy thing, as we may come on to later.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm going to ask you now who you consider to be Chelsea's best manager. Before I ask that, though, if I'd asked you this before the Premier League started, I think I could tell you what your answer was going to be. I'm just wondering if you're going to give me a different answer now.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, okay, well, I'll tell you my thoughts. So, best manager. So, I'll consider some options. So, firstly, Di Matteo and Tuchel both took over a team in turmoil and then took them to European Cup success. So, I mean, that's pretty damn impressive to start off with. And I must give a massive shout to John Neal. John Neal rescued the club. We'd been relegated and fallen apart, bankrupt.
Is this kind of in the 80s for those who aren't familiar with it?
Yes, it is, mate. It is in the 80s, yeah. When I think, I'll come to the worst of times, I'll sort of talk about the dates then. But yeah, I mean, it came from Wrexham.
Yeah,
and,
he did, yeah.
He took over the club, won the championship, signed Speedy, signed Kerry Dixon, Pat Nevin. They absolutely decimated the second division. It was then, never mind this Championship, League Two, League Three cobblers, second division in those days. You know, the first season in the top league, they did really well, and then he had heart trouble and had to sort of retire. But John Neal, massive shout out to John Neal, wrote a piece about him, how he saved Chelsea. The obvious answer is Jose 1.0 when he turned up, you know, as the special one and delivered everything that he promised he would deliver. Even the first season forecast the day Chelsea would win the league in the game against Bolton Wanderers and delivered. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think the only thing that sort of, you know, I would go against Jose, but qualifies his success a little bit because he had money to spend and, you know, he accumulated players and bought massively successful players as well. But I think if I were to say my best manager, it's a guy who used to be a manager of your club as well. Ancelotti won the double with Chelsea and he did something that no other manager since Abramovich has ever achieved. He made Chelsea likeable again. They played really nice football. Ancelotti is such the sort of, I don't know, nice guy. He's like somebody's uncle. He's like somebody's granddad, and the grandkids go up to the, oh, he's a granddad, and he's got a Werther's original in his pocket for the kids. He's just such a nice guy, and he's always got that eyebrow is always sort of raised up. So, you know, and of course, this is Chelsea. So, of course, Chelsea being Chelsea, after he wins the double, what do? They sack him.
And they sacked him at Goodison Park,
right? They sacked him at Goodison Park. He'd just come down for the press conference, and they met him at the bottom. I can't remember who it was. He met him at the bottom of the stairs and said, you know, thanks, Carlo, but, you know, we're terminating your contract. I mean, they'd sacked Ray Wilkins halfway through the season, who worked so well with Ancelotti throughout the season before, and we played some fantastic. I mean, we were scoring goals. We were winning goals 6-0, 7-0, 6-1, 7-2. Ridiculous. And he sacked the guy, for God's sake, he sacked the guy. And probably the reason was that we after winning the league the following season, we got knocked out of the Champions League European Cup by Inter Milan. And who was managing Inter Milan at the time? Jose Mourinho.
Oh, of course it was, yeah.
But I think I just for a fab paper, I'd pick Ancelotti just above Jose because of what Jose had got and what Ancelotti did.
I think so, the point you made there, Gabby, about making Chelsea likeable, because I think, you know, certainly that wasn't Mourinho's strong card, was it, to make Chelsea likeable? Whereas I think Carlo embraced a certain style of football that even neutrals with an anti-Chelsea bias kind of appreciated the skill that was on display.
Absolutely, Paul, you're right. You're absolutely right. And Mourinho almost sort of delighted in that sort of trench warfare, that the world's against us, we don't care. Whereas Ancelotti, I mean, even to this day, I might be wrong here, but I think Real Madrid sits second in the league now after winning the La Liga championship. And this is years later. I mean, the guy is probably the most successful manager in European football history. The titles he's won.
I can never understand why he left ever since he joined Real Madrid, to be honest, Gareth.
Why did he step down to a lower grand club when he could have stayed at Goodison Park, Paul? I mean, I don't understand this.
I've no idea. Just a manager's, Gary, I have to ask you one thing. Going back to the 1960s, Chelsea had two iconic managers, really, Tommy Docherty and Dave Sexton. If you had to choose one or the other, who would you go for and why?
Well, Sexton will feature in the answer to the next question. I think Docherty was so... his time at Chelsea was so iconic because he brought so many young players through. It was almost the genesis of Doherty's reputation as being that sort of manager who was going to be successful and brought attacking players. And he carried that forward and he to other clubs. He went to Manchester United, really did Manchester United as that sort of almost Keegan-like figure of, you know, unfurl the flags and charge down the hills like, you know, the 7th Cavalry. I think so. Probably, I think probably Doherty would be the one. Sexton, well, we'll come on to Sexton a little bit
later,
perhaps.
Well, I think we kind of rolled seamlessly into the next question here, Gary. So, who has been your most frustrating or disappointing manager at Chelsea?
You know, I was looking at this morning, I was looking at the list of Chelsea. I had an idea and I haven't changed my mind, but I just didn't want to miss anybody out. So, okay, here we go. It's difficult. But here's a sort of list. Scolari, you know, this is a guy who'd sort of knocked England out of the World Cup and the European Championship and been successful at club manager. Never, ever looked like working. Didn't stay long. Now, it was Sexton, won the FA Cup and then the following year the European Cup Winners' Cup. And this should have been the opening stanza of an opera that should have been a delight for the next 10 years. He got us relegated 2 years afterwards.
Incredible decline, wasn't it?
Just devastating. I remember it devastating. I remember the 17 World Cup, FA Cup and the Cup Winners' Cup. It was our first season in Europe and we won the European Cup, beating Real Madrid in a replay of the final, which is a story in itself. But we had some great players then. You know, as I say, this Aussie was still there, Ian Hutchinson, Johnny Hollins, Charlie Cook, Alan Hudson.
Pete Benetti was still there.
Pete Benetti, Eddie McCready.
Chopper Harris still at the back.
Chopper Harris was still there, John Dempsey. We had a really good team, Peter Houseman, a really good team.
John Hollins as well.
Johnny Hollins, yeah. Peter Houseman, the guy who always gets forgotten.
Yeah, exactly, absolutely, yeah.
But you think, okay, now we're going to kick on. Okay, perhaps the league title next year, or we're going to certainly challenge for it. Just went like that, off the edge of a cliff. And two years later, we were relegated. And apparently the story goes, and there again, I was never done, but it seems fairly common currency, that his relationship with the players was pretty poor. Now, you know, you have the greatest players in the world, but if you can't make them perform for you, or your way of making them perform doesn't work, you're in trouble. And I think, you know, that's what happened. And now Sexton moved on to, I think he went to Man United afterwards as well, but didn't stay very long. I think he's one of these guys who was perhaps, and sort of comparing with Colin Harvey, a better coach than he was a manager. And he needed a manager. Harvey was successful with Howard Kendall there. When Sexton became manager, he was you can't be a coach and a manager. It almost doesn't work, and certainly in those days.
Absolutely, yeah. And you're right, Gary, it was And it was an unpredicted catastrophic decline, wasn't it? Because, you know, to go from the peak of, you know, FA Cup in 1970, the Covenant Cup in 1971, and one would naturally expect that Chelsea would have gone on from that, because, you know, you could track them, but you had a really good squad there. It was a high-profile team. The manager had a good reputation. One would have thought everything was in place for success. And it's one of the mysteries of football that whenever you expect success, it never happens.
Too right, buddy, too right. And it, as you say, it just never worked. And, you know, as I say, there's lots of theories and the sort of discord between a palpable discord between coach and players is a recurring theme at Chelsea. But, yeah, so Sexton certainly is in my list. Other managers that sort of frustrating or disappointed, Conte won the double. We went to Arsenal. I think we were losing 2-0 or 3-0 quite early in the season. And it changed from a 4 to a 3 with the wing-backs. And this never looked back. We played some brilliant football, won the league, won the double. And then he fell out with the directors. And there again, another one where you think on the very cusp of a great era, fell away. There's an interesting sort of parallel between the tenures of Di Matteo and Tuchel. Both won the Champions League. Both picked up a team that was struggling, and both got sacked the following season. I mean, it's just crazy. Do you recognise a theme here, Paul? It's going to be coming here where success and disaster sort of hold hands. And I guess, you know, so there's the disappointing ones. And perhaps Andre Villas-Boas arrived as, is Mourinho 2.0? You know what you do with your project. You know what you can stick that, don't you? I mean, yeah, okay. The other one, perhaps before I tell you who was my selection, is Graham Potter. And I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he was just a little bit too early for him. He was lauded as being the sort of, you know, the coming guy. A bit like Villas-Boas. This is the coming guy, but he never arrived. But I think my most frustrating, disappointing manager is Mourinho 2.0. When he came back, won the league with a great team, and then that phrase, a palpable discord between the coach and the players. I think it was Emi Arlo, who was director of football at the time, after Mourinho got sacked. We lost to Leicester 2-1 or 2-0, and we were sort of, I don't know, 15th, 16th in the league. And Mourinho did an interview on Sky, I think it was Sky, or it might have been, it was probably Sky. And he said, the players betrayed me. From that moment, he was done. But that's Mourinho. That's Mourinho. Yeah.
And that's what you get with Mourinho. You get the success, but you also get the complications that go with that.
Dead right. Dead right. I mean, it's typical Jose. Won the league with a great team, then did a typical Jose. And the only team that his club that it hadn't happened with is probably Inter. We left Inter on a fairly high, well, fairly high in the European Cup.
He wasn't there long enough to fall out with people. He was only there for two seasons, wasn't
he? That's true. That's true. Yeah, inherited a great team. He just got him over the line there, Mancini couldn't do. But, you know, almost every other club it's been at, you know, there's a pattern. First season, success. Second season, third season, disaster. Let's turn the table over and have a rare with somebody. So Mourinho is probably my most frustrating disappointment. Mourinho 2.0.
Does Rafa Benitez figure in that list?
I looked at him. I mean, I think he was sort of dealt a rough hand, in fairness. You know, he came in after Di Matteo got sacked off.
He wasn't a popular choice, was he?
It wasn't a popular choice. And one of the reasons, obviously, was ex-Liverpool. When he was at Liverpool, you rag Drogba. Now, if you're going to get, you know, endear yourself to Chelsea, don't rag Drogba. Or if you do, expect to be treated that you've done that. And he always had that sort of, his title was interim manager. And he said it wasn't very popular. And, you know, he kept making his point, don't worry, I'm going soon, I'm only the interim manager. But he delivered the Europa League. And in fairness, that made Chelsea one of only five clubs to have won all the possible European titles, being the five in Chelsea. Manchester United did it afterwards. They didn't have it at that time. AC Milan, Juve, and Ajax. It's a pretty unique sort of group. But, you know, he delivered what he was asked to do and delivered the trophy. So fair play. He wasn't a popular guy. He wasn't a popular guy.
He's probably about as popular as Stamford Bridge as he was during his time at Goodison Park.
I mean, you, as an Everton sort of fan, your fans probably disliked him for a slightly different, but not too dissimilar reason that we disliked him for.
Yeah, but it did create a certain bond between Chelsea and Everton fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
The mutual dislike of Rafa Benitez. So on to the best of times. You've touched on some of them already, Gary. So what would you say from all the things we've talked about so far? What would you consider to be the best of times as a Chelsea fan?
Yeah, there again, you know, it's a 60-odd years. It's a pretty long spread to sort of think. So I've picked out a few. So before I come to my favourite one. 1970 FA Cup win. It's the first trophy I remember Chelsea winning. I remember watching the replay against Leeds at Old Trafford, and when David Webb scored that late goal. Was it extra time?
From Hutchinson's long throwing.
I couldn't, Hutchinson with their sort of whirly arms, I remember I was jumping up at the settee and I kicked the settee. I don't know why, but I was just like, Dad says, what are you doing? I said, well, God, they're going to win the FA Cup. But that was the first trophy I remember Chelsea. That was certainly my sort of first joyous moment as a Chelsea fan. We'd lost the FA Cup in 67,
yeah, I think,
to Tottenham when Bobby Tamblyn scored. Bless Bobby. But we lost. I think Robertson and Frank Saul scored against us. That was a great moment. Another one that sort of was the best of times or heralded a change at Chelsea was the arrival of Hullett, Vial and Zola. Petrescu came at the sort of same time, and Di Matteo as well. And all of a sudden, you know, you're thinking, these, I know Hullett was sort of a little bit past his best, so was Vialli. Zola wasn't. I mean, Zola, just magic. Magic man. Went on holiday a few years back to Sardinia, and we happened to go into a bar in Palermo. No, in Palermo, yeah. And there's a guy, he was a Calvary supporter, and he got massive pictures of Zola all over the place. I started talking to the guy there about Zola. He's great. I mean, Zola was wonderful. So that was a great time and heralded a bright future. And the first couple of seasons under Jose was a great time as well. Obviously, this is typical Chelsea. They won the bloody league title the year before I was born. They couldn't wait another Persian year, could they? They had to wait 1955, the year before I was born. We had to wait 50 years for another title. But then we won that title. And then I remember I was working as a builder's merchant at the time, managing a builder's merchant in Wolverhampton. And this guy's Man United supporter there, and we won the title. And I said, oh, this is great. Now you've got a great team. So, no, you've got to win it back-to-back to be a great team. We won it again the following season. I remember going to Craig, have you got to win the Boat Race as well now, or the Grand National? they were great. And, you know, I remember thinking, this is wonderful. 2021, Champions League obviously comes close under Tuchel. I mean, great. And it was the Champions League that we deserved to win. We beat Real Madrid. We beat Atletico. We should be the reigning European champions, Real Madrid. We beat Atletico, the reigning La Liga champions. We beat Man City, the reigning English champions. So, you know, and deserve to win all those games. So we deserve to win that. But if I've got to say, the very, very best of times was 2012. Champions League success. Crazy. I mean, it was that good. I wrote a perishing book about it.
and I would recommend to anyone who's not read Gary's book. He's such a talented writer, and that is a really good book to get your hands on.
Oh, bless you, Paul. Thank you for that. It's called Out of the Blue, and if it's available on Amazon. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy. It was not because we won that. It was the first Champions League. It was the first Champions League, so it was very special because of that. But because how it happened, the crazy games that we got through when we were going out. I mean, losing on aggregate to Barcelona with 10 men and then getting through and then going to Bayern Munich in the final, in their own stadium, losing till the last minute, Drogba's header gets us extra time, then penalties against a German team in their own stadium and bloody won it. I mean, that for me was definitely the best of times.
Was that better because it was so unexpected?
It was. It was the first, and it was the first one. The second one, you know, I mean, I always say 0-1 is the biggest step in the world. 1-2 is like falling off a log afterwards. But it was the first one. But it was, as you say, Paul, you're quite right, so unexpected. So many times we were going out, against Benfica, we were going out against Barcelona, tore us to pieces at Stamford Bridge. And drop a dog to goal, and we won one plonk. And then you go to the Nou Camp, and you know, you're thinking, okay. And I think we had 20 minutes in, we were losing. They'd scored twice, and we had Terry sent off, and we had Basinga, a little fullback playing centre half. Ivanovic was playing centre. I mean, it just coupled. Ramirez are playing right back. It's coupled the team together, and amazingly, when Torres scored that last goal, I mean, I can't. I'm not going to pretend I didn't cry because I perishing did. I mean, it was just an amazing event. And you think I did a podcast with Paul and Steve and Stu many years ago about favourite games, and I can't decide whether that's semi-final, second leg, or the final was my best game, my most favourite game of all time, because I cried at the end of both of them.
Yeah, and of course, if you don't win the semi-final, you can't get to the final.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And I think as well, I mean, that semi-final, I mean, Torres had a really poor season for Chelsea, hadn't he? But he suddenly became alive in the European competition for some reason.
Well, playing for Atleti in Spain, he did so well against Barcelona. Did a brilliant record at the Nou Camp. And, you know, it's one of these guys who, you know, it's a bit like Chris Sutton to a lesser extent. You know, we signed a big fee for this guy who was, you know, renowned as being the real top striker. And on the way down the M6 from Liverpool, he donned this cement waistcoat and decided he couldn't play anymore. But when he was in the Nou Camp and he got that ball, he never looked like he wasn't going to score. It all fell away, and he was home, and he just skipped past Valdez and rolled into the new bag, and the Gary Neville scorgasm. I mean, it crops up on Twitter sometimes. I still have to watch it two or three times. I just think, and there's a great picture from the Sky television production when Torres is sort of on his knees, and Lampard goes to hug him, and behind him there's a couple of there's probably 7 or 8, 10 Barcelona fans, and they're giving him pelts. I mean, I speak a little bit of Spanish, but I don't know those words. I didn't know those words.
They might want to be in Castellan, you never know.
It might be Castellan, that's true, yeah, that's true.
You never know. So you've outlined the best of times there. So the more difficult bit is, but what thing have been the worst of times?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, we talked about earlier about post-Sexton, European Cup of success and the relegation. So the mid-70s, the mid-80s, we only had two seasons in the top flight. And in those two seasons, one we finished 16th, and the other one we finished rock bottom, got relegated. I mean, this is a team where, you know, I remember being in that second. I remember it so well. It's just dogs in your brain. We nearly got relegated to the third tier. Nearly got relegated, and you're thinking, you know, this is just, and you couldn't see a way back. I remember also we played in the FA Cup to Leighton Orient. We're 2-0 up away. We went in 2-0 and lost 3-2.
It was on match of the day, that game.
It was on match of the day. So sad. Terrible. I'd say the worst of times. They were real dog days. But as I mentioned earlier, John Neal turned up, won the title in 1984 with a great team, great players that sort of gelled to speed. The Speedy and Kerry Dixon's partnership was just lethal, and we won the title, the second division title, 1984, in the top flight since. But certainly those couple of years there when we were in the second division, they were terrible. They were soul destroying.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it, Gary? I mean, there were sliding doors moments we often talk about on the podcast. But if, say, for example, say Chelsea had slid into the third division, given the perilous financial situation, one can only wonder what the next step might have been.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we didn't do it, but there's clubs that have. Man City did, Aston Villa did, the Wolves did.
The Baggies did as well.
Yeah. So there's teams that have done that and come back, but in those days, the financial situation was dire. You know, and as I say, John Neal worked absolute miracles with that team and buying players that, you know, didn't spend amazing amounts of money, but spent decent money, and was supported by Bates. He was there at the time then. But he just performed miracles. And, you know, that's why I had to mention John Neal when we talk about the best manager, because it was sort of, if we had gone into the third tier, Yeah, who knows is the honest answer. Who knows? You know, you might claw back. You might just end up sort of, you know, bankrupt. I mean, literally bankrupt.
Yeah. I mean, even those days, finances were starting to play an increasing part in football's life. So in terms of where Chelsea are now, how do you think the club is doing at the moment?
It's post-Roman chaos. It's now sort of, you know, people ask me what they're doing. I mean, potentially, I mean, you want to think, you want to hope, you want to believe, you want to dream, you want it to be true that perhaps things are settling down a little bit now. There seems to be a settled squad of, you know, people say, oh, Chelsea got 600 players in their squad. Well, Maresca seems to have this sort of 18, 22 players, you know, a couple of players for each position, which is what most Premier League clubs do. I mean,
so do you think he's been right to bomb out certain players like Raheem Sterling? You know,
Well, I guess looking at what they've done afterwards, I mean, we've got, in essence, wide players on the left. We've got wide players. We've got Neto. We've got Madueke. We've got Mudrik, who is probably or could have forced his way into that sort of. Is he the worst player? Disappointing player. João Felix and Nkunku. And we've got. I always think this thing about Jackson. People say, oh, he scored more goals in his first league season than Drogba did. In his first league. So, you know, and the kids, he's only a kid still. But I think the jewel in the crown at the moment, the whole, all sort of focus is on the kid, the wonder kid, Cole Palmer. And you know, I watched, even though it's rather easy, you can sort of get into the Chelsea games and watch him play. And I just think it's just amazing. And we sold a mass amount to Man United for, I think, 60 million, 65 million or something. And I was really disappointed because I like Mason Mount, but he'd never come off Man United. And we pocketed 20 million profits and bought Cole instead.
I mean, it's arguably one of the transfer deals of the century, isn't it, so far? Because, Cole Palmer has just been such an outstanding buy for Chelsea. He's been incredibly prolific in the team that wasn't always doing that well at times either.
Too right, mate. And yeah, he's almost been that sort of catalyst. And, you know, there's talk about it being, it's Cole FC, not Chelsea FC. But, I mean, other players have come through as well, you know. And I think, you know, we signed Enzo Fernandez. You're thinking, okay, that should be great. And he's been okay. And when I say okay, I don't mean he's been poor. I mean, almost up to expectations, but not far short, certainly. And then Caicedo, who started pretty poorly, but now looks majestic in midfield, and Lavia as well in there as well. And even the defence, what we need is a top-class goalkeeper. I think we need a top-class goalkeeper. Sanchez is okay, but when the ball's at his feet, it's panic time. Don't try and dribble out. But so to answer your question, I think where we are is we've got plenty of good players. We've got a couple of exceptional players. We're perhaps in a position to challenge top four. Perhaps Maresca. We'll see. So far, so good. I think we're fourth now. If we'd have beaten Nottingham Forest, we'd have been real on the hills of Liverpool and Man City. But that was, you know, we've dropped home points to Crystal Palace, dropped home points to Nottingham Forest, which isn't very good. We still struggle to beat big teams who come to Stamford Bridge and put the low block in, as they call it. But I think, you know, we're a top six potential top four team at the moment.
So that's where Chelsea are at the moment. Well, where do you see them in 5 years' time?
Well, now here's the thing. You wonder what the aspirations are of the owners of the club. The people who bought the club now bought the club to make money. They're not Roman Abramovich. Roman bought the club for a bit of fun. Well, I mean, that's a little bit exaggeration, but, you know, for enjoyment. What worries me is, will we keep the star players? If Palmer keeps performing like he is for another season and a half, and Real Madrid come in with a £150 million bid, they will take the money. Yeah, absolutely stone certain they will take the money. So I think I think Chelsea aren't going to go back to, in this, well, I hope I'm up and wrong, but I can't see Chelsea go back to the dominance of the Roman era. I think where we'll be in 5 years' time is pretty much where we are now. We'll have some decent players coming through. they'll still be selling players. They'll be buying. I mean, we've got some young kids coming through. We've got Estevez from Brazil coming through. Apparently, he's a star. Now you're thinking, okay, well, if he's playing, somebody's going. Who's going then? So, you know, I mean, is that Palmer? Is that, I don't know, is that Jackson?
You'd hope not. You certainly hope it wasn't Palmer.
Oh, if it wasn't Palmer, I mean, I just think the kid's great. But I think, you know, the Roma days aren't coming back anytime soon. They're not. I'll say, so in 5 years' time, where do we think we are? We'll be probably pretty much where we are now, I think.
And I'll throw this one in, Gary. If the so-called European Super League ever happens, would you see Chelsea being a part of that?
It takes a deep breath. Takes a deep breath to consider this before answering. I was quite proud that when it's happened previously, Chelsea were the first club to say no. Now we ain't having this. Because the ownership now of the club is different. And, I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, I'm not disrespect to Manchester United or Liverpool, but the ownership, American ownership of sporting franchises look on these things quite differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think it might. I mean, I'd be disappointed if it did, but I think it might. I mean, the only question is, would we even deserve to be there? perhaps. But I hope not. I hope not, Paul.
I totally agree, Gary. And finally, I think I can anticipate your answer to this question. Is there anything that could make you change your allegiance towards Chelsea Football Club, apart from joining the Super League?
I'm going to answer this with a sort of a memory. I remember driving, this is going back, God knows, I don't know, 20 years. I remember driving back home from work one day and I got Radio 5 on. And I don't know why, but they were at a supporters club, Clydebank Supporters Club in Scotland. And they were talking to people about Clydebank had just finished bottom of the first division, so that's the second tier. So they were about 12 points adrift. And they asked assistant manager had to play in goal the previous game because the goalkeeper hadn't been paid and he wouldn't play. They were in turmoil, basically. And there was this guy was at the supporters club and he said to one of the supporters, so you know, the club's not really doing very well. Why do you keep supporting? Why don't you? You're in Glasgow. Why don't you support Celtic or Rangers or with Motherwell, you know? And this guy got the best answer to your question I've ever heard. And I've quoted this on podcasts in the past. He said, you're not a football fan because you wouldn't have asked that question. You can change your job, you can move house, you can get a divorce, you can even emigrate, but you can't change a football club. If you're a true supporter, they don't belong to you, you belong to them. They'll break your heart and you'll still go back for more because they own you.
And that's been the whole point of this series, Gary. That's just the absolutely perfect answer as well. So I've just had to say, guys, it's been fantastic talking to you this evening. Obviously, we're kind of the same age, so we've got lots of cultural references that we can kind of pick up upon. It's been great listening to you talk about some unheralded people from Chelsea's past, such as Bobby Tambling and John Neal, who might not have the kind of recognition these days that perhaps they deserve. And I would advise anybody who's not heard of these players or managers before, go and read about them, go and check them out, because they had played a crucial part in what became the modern successful Chelsea. And it's been absolutely fascinating listening to your stories, your memories. Pete Osgood, what a player. I've totally enjoyed turning the tables upon you, Gary. So once again, thanks very much. It's been bliss. I've been absolutely brilliant listening to Gary talk about his first one true love, not Mrs. Thacker, is Chelsea Football Club.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.